You would take your Bibles and turn to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. Yesterday we had the opportunity, many of us, of going to camp, and so Chuck asked in Sunday school, and this was my plan to do it, so I'm going to ask anyway, how many of you went to camp and were glad you did? All right. How many of you went to camp and rode the zip line? How many of you for the first time rode the zip line? Okay, several of you for the first time. How many of you went to camp and got sunburned? How many of you went to camp and got a tick? Okay. We had a great time at camp. When we were talking with John, or when I was talking with John, camp is just an all-encompassing ministry. There are so many things that go on in a camping ministry. One of the things, though, that he was sharing with me is we're trying to figure out our property, okay? And so we've been doing some surveying of the camping grounds, and it comes to find out that the camp has been letting the neighbor farm about 7.5 acres for the last 40 years for free because the fence is wrong. And so the question is, now that there's conflict because you've got this fence, right? And from a visual perspective, what does the fence say? Well, that's where the boundary is. That's where the line is. That's the ownership. However, the stake in the ground and the GPS and the state has a map that says, no, it's not over here. It's 7.5 acres over to this one way. And so there's great conflict because what you see is not actually what's real. It's not the truth, right? It's not the authority. We come to Luke chapter 6, and Jesus is going to say, what you see, that fence that the Pharisees have put up in regards to righteousness and unrighteousness, is about 7.5 acres off of what God's true intention of what righteousness is. It's not close. However, what's easier to see? Is it easier to see the fence? Or to go get the survey and do all of the dirty work to figure out exactly where righteousness is? Well, it's easier to see the fence, right? It's easier to see what's on top of the surface rather than to look below the surface to figure this out. Jesus is literally going to take and tear the fence down of the Pharisees' righteousness in chapter 6 and following. And he's going to begin to dig the dirt so that we can actually see exactly where the line of righteousness is and it isn't. And so this morning is really just the beginning to get to the heart of the matter of what righteous living is. And there's no more appropriate way to address righteous living than to hit the Sabbath on the head, so to speak. And so we come to Luke chapter 6, and we have what's called Sabbath controversies. Would you stand with me out of respect for the reading of God's word? I'm going to read Luke chapter 6, verses 1 through 11. And let's see how Jesus, and let's listen how Jesus tells us what right living is. Verse 1, on a Sabbath, while he, that's Jesus, was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. But some of the Pharisees said, why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath? And Jesus answered them, have you not read that David, what David did when he was hungry, and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and also gave it to those with him? And he said to them, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Now on another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there with his right hand who was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts. And he said to the man with the withered hand, come and stand here. And he rose and stood there. And Jesus said to them, I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or do harm, to save life or to destroy it? And after looking around at them, all he said to him, stretch out your hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Father, I pray that you would open our eyes to your text this morning and that you would give us spiritual lens to see what true righteousness is and what living a right life is all about. Help us to forsake the notion of legalism in our sanctification and to embrace your morality for our lives. And so, Father, my prayer is that you would just give me the words to communicate, to speak to the hearts that are here this morning, so that lives may be changed and equipped to do your work. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. Thank you. Last week, we looked at some very difficult parables, but those parables, I remind you, teach us that the Pharisees' righteousness is rooted in perfect obedience to the law through regulation. Jesus' righteousness is radically different than that because Jesus' righteousness is rooted in the grace of God by faith. And Luke 6 now begins to answer the question, what is righteous living? How do I live right? And then specifically it's going to show us, or it's going to contrast, how is righteous living according to Jesus different than righteous living according to the scribes and the Pharisees? And Jesus takes us immediately to the heart of the matter on righteous living. And really the contrast here, as we will see, is like night and day. Because immediately we're placed into one of the most sacred and outward appearing forms of righteousness within Judaism. That's the Sabbath day. Keep the Sabbath day holy. Keeping the Sabbath day holy is the greatest visible expression of a righteous living Jew. Not circumcision, not anything else, but one could tell easily who kept the Sabbath and who did not keep the Sabbath. Man, woman, or child. If you kept the Sabbath, you pretty much did nothing except maybe go to synagogue. And so there was very little activity done. There was very little visible presence of an individual who kept the Sabbath. However, those who didn't, it became very obvious for those who did not keep the Sabbath. And so now here in Luke verses 6:1-11, Jesus attacks really the heart of the scribes and the Pharisees' belief that right living comes through strict regulations. And Jesus exposes a fatal flaw of rule following. And he exposes this fatal flaw of rule following to show us that living morally upright is superior to living according to regulations. Living morally upright is superior to living regulations. You see, the heart of righteous living is morality, not regulation. Morality, not regulation. Verses 1 through 5, we're on a particular Sabbath day. Jesus is not teaching on the Sabbath. He's actually traveling on the Sabbath. Maybe he's going to the synagogue and back, but that travel would have been limited. Regardless, they're walking through a stranger's grain field. His disciples pick the grain, they rub it together, and then they eat the grain. Now, the law permits the disciples to do this activity. However, the problem is the day on which this activity was performed. It's Saturday. It's the Sabbath. And so in the eyes of the Pharisees, in the eyes of the regulation, as they picked the grain, they reaped. As they rubbed the grain together, they threshed. As they removed and discarded the husk, they winnowed. And as they ate, they had prepared a meal. And any kind of reaping, any kind of threshing, any kind of winnowing of grain in an amount more than the size of a dried fig, you know what a fig looks like, right? A dried fig. Anything more than a half dollar was considered breaking Sabbath law. So essentially, in one act, they break four Sabbath regulations forbidden by both the Talmud and the Mishnah. Therefore, Luke says that when the Pharisees saw them, they say, why are you doing what's not lawful to do? You see, what we need to understand is that had they done this on Friday, or had they done this on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, not a problem. This was okay. This was okay. The problem was here that they had broken a ceremonial regulation, not a moral law. And I think it's significant as we jump into here, we understand the difference between God's moral laws and God's ceremonial laws, okay? And I want to give you what helped me, a commentator that really helped me explain the difference and understand the difference. God's moral laws are those laws that relate to his justice and his judgment. And in your English translations, the word for God's moral law is often translated ordinances. Or the Hebrew word is mishpatim, okay? Ordinances. So when you see in the Old Testament, in the Psalms, and throughout that, when you see God's ordinances, he's talking about God's moral law, laws that reflect God's holy nature, laws that reflect God's justice and his unchanging nature. And the purpose of these laws are to promote the welfare of those who obey and those around them. And it encompasses regulations and laws that reflect justice, that reflect respect, sexual conduct, and the Ten Commandments would be included in God's moral laws, okay? Ceremonial laws, however, are literally translated customs of the nation. Customs of the nation. And in your English translations, that Hebrew word is most often translated statutes. And so when you read through the Psalms, it'll often talk about God's ordinances and God's statutes. When it says ordinances, it's God's moral law. When it says statutes, it means God's custom of the nation. Now, the customs of the nations, the ceremonial laws, are instructions or laws regarding how do you have a right standing with God. In other words, sacrifices and ceremonies. It also talks about remembering God's work through feasts and festivals. It talks about specific regulations that distinguish the Jews from their pagan neighbors, like the clothing aspect, right? They couldn't have mixed clothing, or their dietary restrictions, or their Levitical priesthood restrictions. Those are all customs of the nations that God had given. Even the signs of pointing to the Messiah of Sabbath, circumcision, Passover, and the redemption of the firstborn are customs of the nation. They're ceremonial. And the reason I bring this up is because when we look at what the disciples are doing, they are not breaking a moral law here, because it's granted in Deuteronomy chapter 23 that if you walk through anyone's field, you are permitted to do this as long as it was by hand and not with instrument. The issue is they did it on the Sabbath. And so the issue becomes, are they keeping the Sabbath holy? Are they setting that apart unto the Lord? Or did this activity make the Sabbath ordinary? Did they profane it? And according to the Pharisees' regulations, strict adherence to the nation's customs, the answer is yes. They call it unlawful. They profaned the Sabbath. They broke it by feeding themselves. But not just them, Jesus too, because Jesus is their leader. And so Jesus, by permitting them to do this, is also a lawbreaker. So what Jesus does is he responds by giving them an analogy. An analogy where the Old Testament law is broken, but there is no condemnation declared. And so he reminds them of a familiar story in 1 Samuel 21. We don't have time to go over there, so let me tell you, or kind of retell you, what's happening in 1 Samuel 21. 1 Samuel 21, David just starts to run from Saul, King Saul, because King Saul is going to kill him if he gets the chance. And as he flees, he comes to a place called Nob, where the presumed location of the tabernacle, and Ahimelech, the priest, overseeing that tabernacle. Well, on the run, with no time to take provision for himself or his men, he goes in and he asks Ahimelech if he has any food. And Ahimelech responds, "Well, I don't have any common bread. I only have holy bread." And this holy bread is bread that would have been set before the Lord as before the presence of the Lord on the altar of the showbread. And every morning that bread would have been replaced, and then the bread that came off would have been deconsecrated and then placed in a storage unit or a storage place so that the priests could eat that bread. Because according to Leviticus 24, only the priests could eat the deconsecrated bread that was set before the presence of the Lord. Are you following me? I'm really going kind of, I know it's a long way, but it's really helpful to get this background. Long story short, anybody who ate this bread broke the law. That wasn't a priest. Okay? You couldn't eat it because it was consecrated to the Lord. And God said in his law, only priests can eat it. Well, Ahimelech asks him, are your men holy? Are they set apart to the Lord on mission for the Lord, doing what's right? David says, yes. And so Ahimelech makes an exception. And he gives him all of the bread that was holy that had been set before the presence of the Lord, other than obviously the bread of the day that was set before the presence of the Lord. And so he gives him the holy bread. David takes this holy bread. He then gives it to his men, and he and his men eat it at some point, which was unlawful. It broke the law. And yet all of it occurs without condemnation to Ahimelech, without curse to David, without curse to his men. There's silence here. And so Jesus uses this example, or why does Jesus use this example? He uses it because it demonstrates an offense to God's rule that does not result in condemnation. And the Old Testament has many examples of divinely blessed disobedience. I'm going to say that again because I know in church that's hard to hear. The Old Testament has many examples of divinely blessed disobedience. Okay? Let me give you some. In the book of Exodus, as Exodus just starts, there are two midwives that Pharaoh appoints to deliver baby Hebrew children, right? And he says, when you deliver the baby, you're to take that baby and you're to kill it. What do? They deliver the baby and they hand it over to mom and they say, these Hebrew wives, they are just good women who deliver really quick, and by the time we get there, they're gone. And they disobey Pharaoh's orders. We have the story of Rahab hiding and lying about the two spies, right? Rahab is in the line of Jesus Christ, and she's blessed for her disobedience. We have Ruth telling Naomi, no, I'm not going to obey my superior. I'm going to go with you. We have Michael, David's wife, and Jonathan, David's best friend, lying to their father, King Saul, to protect David and to hide David from him, blatantly lying. We have Elisha. We talked about this 2 weeks ago in Sunday night. We have Elisha telling Elijah, no, I'm not going to obey you. I'm going with you. I'm not going to forsake you. And we have multiple other examples like that where God divinely blessed disobedience. And all of these illustrate that lawfulness is not always righteousness. And David's example here reveals that. That's why Jesus does that. Because if the Pharisees have a problem with Jesus' disciples' activities, if they have a problem with Jesus' leadership, you know who else they have to have a problem with? Ahimelech, David, his men, and God. Because God does nothing about it. And so the issue now comes right to the heart of the matter. Jesus' men have broken their custom. But is that God's true desire? Is their custom, is their tradition, is their regulation God's desire? Is it genuine unrighteousness to sustain life by eating food? What do we hear? Well, we hear crickets, right? We don't hear anything from them because they know Jesus has backed them into a corner by which they cannot get out without condemning themselves. Jesus then takes this the next step, a step farther, right? And he goes on and he gets to the heart of the issue, so to speak, when he says in verse 5, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. The Son of Man is Lord over the Sabbath. This is a different statement than what Mark says because there's a different purpose here in Luke's writing. Because Jesus now, Luke wants us to see that Jesus has divine authority over the Sabbath. Luke's point is that Jesus claims authority over the divinely instituted day given in the Ten Commandments, a day where the prophets say, God has given you this day so that you can know him. And Jesus says, listen, I'm Lord over that day for you to know the Lord. I know that's circular reasoning, so let me explain it for you. That day was set apart so they could know Jesus. Okay? And yet, what do? They don't know him. They reject him and they refuse it. The Sabbath day was God's gift to them. And yet they reject it. And what Jesus shows us in this text, I believe, is that right living is not a matter of lawfulness, but it's a matter of rightness. Morality is greater than lawfulness. Morality is greater than lawfulness. You see, God did not intend the Sabbath to starve his people. God did not intend that eating would breach a Sabbath day. You see, God is not about oppressing people so that they might know him. Oh, he oppresses people at times to draw them unto him, but not so that they know intimate knowledge of him. God is about liberating people so they might know him. And what does the Sabbath do? Sabbath liberates you, liberates the people from the concerns, the works, the engagements of everyday life, so that they can then rest and focus on the Lord. So that they can pursue a relationship that's based upon righteousness and faith. It's about liberating them from this earthly responsibility to learn to live a better way. And the Pharisees completely miss this. They're so concerned with keeping the law that they fail the concern to get close to God. And so I wonder this morning, is your standard of righteous living centered on keeping preferences, regulations, or getting close to God? What's more important, your standards or your relationships? Because Jesus is breaking down these standards. So what does this mean? What does this look like? Let me give you a couple examples, I think, how we might apply this, so to speak. Okay, do we teach our young children, do we teach a strict dress code? Or do we teach them modesty and appropriate apparel for activities? Okay? Which one is more important? How about this? Do we regulate intergender conduct? In other words, how I deal with another woman outside of my wife. Do we say, here are the strict boundaries that you do? Or do we teach the heart of the matter, which is integrity and virtue and respect? Do we make knowledge and knowing everything the highest goal? Or do we rather promote the supremacy of wisdom, that is, the application of what we already know? Is separation the goal of this life, or is holiness the goal of this life? Morality or regulation? I'm telling you, this is good stuff when you start really thinking about it and contemplating it, okay? And it really breaks down, I think, some traditional barriers that the church really struggles with, that you and I really struggle with, because it's so easy to say, here's a rule, follow it, and you'll always be right. Isn't it? It's way easier to do that, and it's way easier to teach rule following than it is to teach character and integrity and morality. If you've got kids, you know that. It's way easier to make a whole list of rules and say do's and don'ts than it is to say live right, and I got to now teach you what that means, right? This is what Jesus is saying. He's tearing down that wall, that fence, because he wants to get to the heart of the issue. And Jesus' righteous way is morally superior to lawful regulation. So what does this look like? Those were some kind of examples. Let's get into some, what does this look like? Well, I'm glad you asked me what it looks like, because that's why we have verses 6 through 11. Verses 6 through 11 show us exactly what this looks like for Jesus. Jesus' righteous way is superior because Jesus' righteous living does good. I'm going to say something here, and I'm doing it on purpose. So grammar snobs, I'm doing it on purpose. I know it's wrong, okay? Jesus' righteous living does gooder than lawfulness, okay? It serves the point. You get it. You get it. See, at the heart of right living restores. It doesn't remain. It restores. It doesn't remain. Let me explain what that means here because you'll see it right in our text. Here's what happens. It's a second Sabbath day. It's not the following one. He doesn't tell us. Again, Luke's writing for his theme. He's writing for his intent on what we need to grasp and understand. And so now this is another Sabbath day. Jesus has gone into the synagogue, and there he's sitting teaching in the synagogue. And up here is a man who's got a withered right hand. It's lame. It just hangs there. It's useless. And it's been useless for a very long time. And as the man is there, you've got the Pharisees over here, and they're looking at Jesus, and they're looking at the lame man, and they're looking at Jesus, and they're looking at the lame man, and they're thinking, oh, I hope he heals him. I hope he heals him, because they know if he heals him on the Sabbath, he's broken Sabbath regulations. They've caught him profaning. And so now we move from verses 1 through 5, which is about Jesus' disciples, but now we go right to Jesus. Jesus, knowing their thoughts, calls this man forward because he wants to prove a point. And there, with the man standing in front of the entire congregation of the assembly, he looks at them. He looks at the Pharisees. And look at verse 9. He says, I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save life or to destroy it? Is it lawful on the Sabbath? The question is it lawful? And you know what the answer is? No. That's the answer. It is not lawful to do good on the Sabbath. It is not lawful to save life on the Sabbath. Now, please understand me. The law makes provision for a person to provide any measure of assistance in an emergency situation on the Sabbath for either man or animal. Your goat falls into a hole on the Sabbath. You get to go get your goat, pick him up, and care for him. Your child runs and scrapes his knee and is bleeding all over. You get to go pick up your child, carry him into the house, wipe off his bloody knee, and fix him, okay? So this isn't about the law prohibiting a person from saving life. That's not what Jesus is addressing. The point is that the Pharisees have regulated righteousness and law to the point where it had never been intended by God to do. You see, the heart of the matter is the question, why do your Sabbath regulations prohibit good works which glorify God on the very day that's set aside to glorify God? Does that make sense? Well, why are you stopping the glory of God on the very day that the glory of God is supposed to be revealed and praised? It doesn't make sense at all. Which is more right, to do good for someone who is in desperate need, though it might break the law, or to neglect to do that good because it's lawful? And to the Pharisees, the answer is fulfill the law and fail the need. Because any non-essential thing on the Sabbath would break the law. You know what Jesus should have done in the eyes of the Pharisees? They should have said, man, I'm really sorry that your arm has been lame. Why don't you come back tomorrow and I can fix that? That would have been okay with them. However, because his ailment preceded the Sabbath, wasn't worsened on the Sabbath, and could be fixed tomorrow, Jesus could not heal the man according to their law. And so the question he asks, is it lawful on the Sabbath to heal this man? You know what the answer is? No, it's not lawful. So what does Jesus do? What does he do to show us a righteous living, what righteous living is like? He heals the man, right? He heals the man. He restores the man. You see, here's the thing. Their righteousness, the Pharisees' righteousness, would have left the man crippled. They would have left Levi sitting in his tax booth. They would have left the paralyzed man unforgiven. They would have left the leper outside the community, and they would have left Peter in the boat in his sin. They would have left everything as status quo. They would have left everything remaining just as it is, right? What does Jesus do? Luke says, his hand was restored. He restores what's wrong, right? I don't know where I heard it. I heard it this week. I don't know if it was on the radio, if it was something I read. But I heard the statement, and I fell head over heels for it. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. The statement was something like this. Jesus's miracles restore creation's chaos caused by sin. Jesus' miracles restore creation's chaos caused by sin. Here, Jesus restores this man. What could be more appropriate? What could be more sacred? What could be more glorifying than fixing the curse of sin on the Lord's day? Nothing. Nothing. Yet the point is, verse 11, the Pharisees are filled with fury. I mean, they're on fire. They're hot. They're angry. And they're so angry, they begin to discuss how are they going to get Jesus. On what day? The Sabbath day. You see, their righteous way of living led them to do what? Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or harm? Is it lawful on the Sabbath to save life or? Who was Jesus talking to? Right? Who was Jesus talking to? He hit him right between the eyes. Because on the Sabbath day, they were so zealous for the law that they were willing to take their eyes off of God, put it on Jesus for the very intent of harming him and destroying his life. Jesus' righteous way seeks to do good by saving this man from a life, at least where his hand is useless, to restore him. And so Jesus shows us that doing good is more righteous than following the law. In other words, a zeal for doing goodness and a zeal for doing what's right in God's eyes is greater than a zeal for keeping his law. Now, I'm not talking about the exceptions to God's rules. I'm talking about the very heart of God's rules here. The very heart of the matter. And I think James gives us the perfect test, right? Because he says, as it's in your bulletin, whoever knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, for him it is sin. For him it is sin. This is what Jesus says to the Pharisees. Helping this man is a moral thing. And morality always has authority over legality. And so the question for followers of Jesus should not be, is this activity prohibited or is this activity permissible? But rather, is this morally right? Is this the good thing to do? Is this the saving thing to do? During the Holocaust, thousands of German families chose to disobey their national laws to hide, house, and provide for their Jewish neighbors. We have countless stories of people choosing to do what's right in that situation over choosing to do what's legal. Now let me ask you this. Did they break the law? The answer is absolutely yes, they did. Did God view their activity, however, as righteous even though they broke the law? And the answer is absolutely he did. Absolutely he did, because Jesus' righteous way of living does good despite the law's declaration. So what does this mean for us today? Well, Jesus says in John chapter 13, a new commandment I give to you. In other words, this isn't a new one as a different one. This is new one that's similar, that precedes the other ones, and that sums it all up. He says, you love one another. You love one another as I have loved you. You see, Jesus' righteous way of living loves people more than following rules. Loving your neighbor is more righteous than legal conformity. And I think that those Old Testament examples that I just shared with you exemplify that very fact. Righteousness is not defined by following rules. It's about loving God wholeheartedly and loving your neighbor wholeheartedly. John says in 1 John chapter 3, whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. They're co-equal. Righteous activity and loving your brother are co-equal. If you do not have both, you're not of God. The Good Samaritan is a prime example of this, is it not? Who is the one who loved his neighbor? The Samaritan. The Levite and the priest were responsible to help their countrymen, regardless of whether it made them late or it made them ceremonially unclean. They were still responsible to help him. And there's nothing more important than loving your neighbor, because through loving your neighbor, you love God. And Jesus' followers ought not be so focused about following the rules. Following Jesus is not about, okay, did I keep the Ten Commandments today? No, it's, did I love God today wholly? Did I love my neighbor completely? That's the heart of righteousness. Am I choosing to do good, or am I so focused on following the rules that I neglect to meet the needs and to do good when opportunity arises? What's more important, character or rule following, virtue or lawlessness or lawfulness, integrity or obedience? Church, there's always going to be an exception to the rules. There's always going to be an exception to lawfulness. There's always going to be an exception to disobedience. Several years ago, I had Ella on the trouble chair because, well, she was on the trouble chair, right? And I was hot. And I said, if you get off this chair, it will go bad for you. I used my papa voice and my prophet's voice, right? And I said, don't move. I got to go upstairs and I got to get something. I'm going to come right down. Well, just as I was about to come downstairs after grabbing whatever I needed to grab, Ella was at the top of the stairs. And I puffed myself up and I put my finger out there and she said, Daddy, Ava fell down and is bleeding. She really needs you. And then she ran downstairs. Did she obey? No. No. But did she do what was right? The answer is yes. You see, this isn't about finding the exception. That's not what Jesus is doing. He's getting our eyes on the heart of the matter. What's right? What's moral? What's restorative? That's what his righteous living is like. Rule following is never sufficient for righteousness. And Jesus' way of righteousness promotes a life and a heart that restores. Because character and integrity are far superior to merely rule following. And so Jesus' righteous way, it seeks character, it seeks virtue, it seeks integrity, not so that we discard God's law, not so that we can get rid of what God says, but so that we can live to the heart of God's law, the intent, the purpose of God's law. So that we can live righteous, because when we love God wholeheartedly, when we love people more than we love ourselves, we do that because we've experienced the very love of God ourselves. We've experienced his righteousness ourselves. And we offer his righteousness by our acts and our deeds of love and righteousness. Church, we have to be very careful of legalizing our sanctification. And listen, I'm not saying it's easy, okay? But the highest goal we have ought to be our closeness with God. The highest goal we have ought to be living right before God, not by a set of standards, but by the sweet, peaceful intimacy of a relationship. Jesus puts righteous works in perspective here. Are we doing good? Are we saving life? Are we living every day with moral integrity that's centered upon love? Because at the heart of righteous living is moral uprightness. In a life that seeks to restore in love, not to let things simply remain. And so Jesus starts off Luke shows us Jesus starting off this area of righteous living really with a bang. A bang that takes their biggest, the Pharisees' biggest fence, their broadest fence, their deepest dug fence, and we see him just tear it out right from the cement foundation. Because righteousness is not about following the rules. Righteous living is about doing what's right. And we know we do right when we love God and we love people like Jesus.